Without a ball, it's just a court. And without your spirit, it's only a game. So, together with the fans, we bring our best. For your next pregame, let's share a twist on a classic, the Hennessy Margarita. A squeeze of fresh lime juice and a bit of agave syrup, topped off with ice and a salted rim. Mix it, shake it, pour it, and enjoy the spirit of the NBA. Hennessy, without your spirit, it's only a game. 21 and older, please drink responsibly.
Your body is unique, so why would you settle for a weight loss plan that's one size fits all? Noom is the weight management program that takes into account your biology to build a custom plan just for you. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com and check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
What's up, y'all? Welcome back to another special episode of Point Forward, the podcast. Myself, Andre Iguodala, with my guy, Evan Marcel Turner.
Yo, yo, what's up, Dre? So last week we had D-Wade on the show. We were talking about the all-in-one and everything. And this past weekend, you sent me a video and made progress. I'm not a hole-in-one, but a beautiful shot nonetheless. I think you told me it was going to be a birdie, and it turned out to be an eagle, correct?
You almost there. It was an eagle that was a birdie. Almost eagle, but then it was a birdie. So the video I sent you was a drive that it was a spray to right, but I was in the fairway over it, and I hit an incredible shot on a par five from like 220 out, landed on the green, and I had an eagle putt, just missed, and then tap in for birdie. So, and it was the 18th hole. It's a way to go home.
Hey, man, it keeps you honest, right?
I guess so. I don't play golf as much anymore. I'm, like, busy now, so sad.
Point. Forward.
This is Andre Iguodala.
This is Evan Turner.
We're trying to get to the true essence of not just basketball, but life, and that means something.
It is like a finger pointing away to the moon. Don't concentrate on the finger, or you will miss all that heavenly glory.
That level of understanding has been taken out of the game.
All right, so ET, as we've been talking about expansion, we can note how the NBA has instituted the in-season tournament as a way to expand interest, excitement into the early part of the season, which was the main point of it all, I think. And guys have been incentivized to take games in November, December. I hate that narrative. It's so annoying. Because Everyone understands how important it is to get off to a good start.
Yeah.
If you're a great team, you need to get off a good start to make your position to be the number one seed. If you're one of the teams that's on the outside looking in, everyone's at 0-0. You can catch a wave early, get off to a hot start, morale's up, get some confidence. Like, no one wants to be checking out in January. No one does. I don't know who does, unless you got one of those bad teams. But it's only four or five of them. And so it's annoying with the narrative that games in November, early December don't matter. Like, I never viewed it like that. I hope that isn't how the game is viewed. I don't see it as like that. Yeah. Like, most cats are trying to make the All-Star game. Like, I got time to make it this year. Like, if I get off to a good start, I can get some accolades.
Yeah, and true, I think that as well. But, like, this is another conversation where I think, sometimes, like, the experts get drowned down in a sentence. And the experts are probably the guys in the locker room that are actually part of the game. Even when you look at the people in the front office, they're good with numbers and things like that. But they're not experts in basketball. They don't really understand basketball talk because they're not doing it every single day. They might be doing basketball-related things. And I think sometimes – you know what that is like? That was just a negative narrative that was brought to light. So we're sitting here, there's a bunch of people saying, like, so kids can take advantage of the game and take December very seriously. It's like, who sat here and said we never took it very serious? Whoever thought that literally has never been in the locker room.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? Or like, when it's coming down to it, you said people aren't taking it serious and not change the rules or change the narrative, but like, all right, let's do stuff that doesn't saturate the game down. You know what I mean? Or like fuck up the mission, everything. But we're sitting here trying to build stuff and acting like guys don't care. Like, no, y'all trying to build teams in Detroit. In December, it might look like they suck and they might be giving up, but that's the route of, you know, the result of trying to rebuild, being able to take assets, build towards the future, and play and manipulate the game. Back in the day, it was all about just competition. Now it's about everything besides, you know, when it's coming down to just being social media-wise and all this stuff to try to build a game. It's chess moves that are really going into it. I think sometimes the result of this is the NBA play-in tournament to make it seem like we don't care about the game. Like, we don't give a damn about the game, or we're trying to force players to play, and that's not the case.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. But the NBA has always been smart about, you know, monetizing every part of the game. And so I think I always thought it was a cool idea. I just didn't like the narrative behind why. Just say, hey, y'all ain't really watching as actively as we would like for y'all to. So we're going to put this in-season tournament in. It's kind of like soccer. In-season cup. All right, cool. It's dope. You know how much money that's being made off this? Like, it's super dope. Now, I just never wanted it to be more important than the finals. Finals is always the golden standard. Make that the golden standard. And so you got more participation in terms of the viewer. And this gambling thing is at the center of everything in terms of how you're making money. All the money that all these gambling platforms are spending money on, customer acquisition costs are super high. That really means that there's real value behind gambling. And so that leads me to DraftKings in-season tournament MVP odds and in-season tournament champion odds, which is super interesting to see who's moving up, who's moving down. Obviously, Jokic, Tatum, Doncic, Giannis were the top four. But there's been some movement. Jokic has moved up the ladder. He's distanced himself further to the leader of the pack. Tatum is around the same. He's moved up, but he's still two. Doncic moved up ahead of Giannis. Luka did. Steph jumped. Dame jumped, interestingly, but I haven't seen how the last week has affected this because they took a couple bad losses. Like, Milwaukee's had some interesting games this year. They had big wins and, like, really bad losses. Probably the most interesting two names I see, maybe three names. Jalen Brunson's moved up to 10. Donovan Mitchell's moved up to 11th. And Trae Young is up there. Tyrese Haliburton moved up a lot, but we know Tyrese. But Jalen Brunson been hooping.
Yeah, I think one thing with the Knicks and everybody being on their ass and everything, but there have been a lot of close games, and Julius Randle's only shooting like 28%.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So, so literally, they if you didn't pitch a fit the other night, they probably could have beat Milwaukee. You know what I mean? Like, they messed up on the last play, but he's 5-for-20. He hasn't even started to shoot well yet. Now, I don't know how it's going to fare well versus, like, the Stars, but I think when it's coming down to it, and those little situational games, it's not so much a sprint, more so than a tone you set. I don't know. I just feel like, you know, with Tibbs and dealing with those guys, anything is possible in the sense of trying to win, you know, 4 or 5 games. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, a single elimination, which makes it more open for a team to win. The odds in terms of teams, it's Denver, followed by Boston, Milwaukee, then the Warriors are at 4. The Warriors got off to a really hot start. Phoenix just dropped off. The Lakers have dropped off. Philly has dropped off. Philly has some good games and then some really bad games. The Heat have dropped off. Brooklyn's moved up.
Yeah.
But I feel like anybody can get high. Remember back in the day, like Atlanta? Atlanta would go on like a 19-game winning streak. Or Houston 1 year. Houston had Brooks 1 year. They went on like a 17-game winning streak, right? So it's all about timing, get hot. And I feel like that's really going to have these bets really popping because a single game elimination and anything can happen.
Yeah, that's real. But to be honest with you, you can say Denver, man. I got the Celtics on it, bro. They're too loaded.
They got the same odd. No, yeah. Denver's slightly above them. This ain't me saying it. This is draft.
No. I'm totally digging you. I'm just saying in general. Like, I'm going with the killers. Like, they got four straight killers in this early in-season tournament. They're the most ready team, in my personal opinion. Like, they're all connected right now. And they're undefeated. What are they, 7-0, 8-0?
Oh, Boston ain't lost yet.
Yeah, Boston ain't lost yet, bro. Boys ain't fucking around, bro. Tatum getting 30 every night.
And then the other Tatum cold, man.
Yeah, and then, bro, Drew almost got a triple-double the other night. Like, it's a joke. Derrick White, like, yeah, bro, it's a joke, man. Like, stop. Let me make a bet.
Yeah. You know what? I will say, I've been watching that. How long we been in the playing games? It's been 2 years?
Three years, probably.
And LeBron been in a lot of playing games thus far, and they always find a way to win.
Yeah, I mean, because at the end of the day, it's like what Brian said the one time. Like, shoot, when they were talking about him coming in versus the Pacers and possibly giving up home court advantage back in the day, he's like, bro, if I'm coming into your building, you're going to have a problem on your hands. I don't know what you're talking about. And when I walk into your building, I don't care about home court advantage, playing game, whatever. Like, no, bro, that's Brian. Like, if Steph Curry can't take him out of the playoff game, nobody can take him off in the playoff game. Like, you know what I mean?
What my man saying coming to America? What? He ain't lying.
You're not lying, G. Oh my God, man. That man a problem, man. That man is a problem. Sometimes I'm not gonna call him a GOAT, but like, I be sounding dumb not doing it. That's for sure.
There's nobody in our time that can really beat him if it's like one game to win. Like in the series, I figure out a way to scheme on him. And we'll take a couple, and you give me Kevin Durant, I'm gonna take out some guys.
I'm gonna be completely honest with you. One game with Brian, I feel like if this right lands, I like taking Brian out in one game. Now I think about it, a week work, man, you're gonna come back walking different, bro.
That is a great take.
Think about it. Like, now there's one where I just randomly stun him, cool, but. You heard what Jeff Teague said when they got into it in the playoffs. Like, he's trying to kill Dellavedova. He's like, this all night. It's gonna be a bad night. LeBron is like, can you outscore me though?
That was one game.
He's like, can you outscore me for a week? If you could do that, go ahead. He said, LeBron averaged 38. He averaged 18.
Yeah, it's true.
Can you outscore me for a week?
And I think that was the greatness of Steph. Steph can actually outscore. He'll catch a hot 2 weeks, and he'll outscore you for 2 weeks. And KD gonna outscore you. Period. If KD in a good mood, we got problems.
No, that's lit, bro. That's still bogus, bro. Shout out to the two championships, but Steph could have did it by himself. I hate even bringing it up, but goddamn, Steph ain't need that man, bro.
Man, stop acting like Kyrie ain't like that. And it's looking like Kyrie might be cooking up something right now. He came back this past week. It's good to see him back on the court. But you can have that opinion, but as long as he's staying in that corner, you keep your eyes open on the flight on the one way further west from what they say.
And shout out to Grant Williams. He's doing his thing. 15 a game, cooking. Shout out to Grant Williams. That shit looks terrible. But it's all a door. It's like he run like he doodling, but he scoring like every time. G, shout out to Grant Williams, man. Love it. And I will say this, man. Your man was on his ass when they played Draymond. Now, he might not have better years than Draymond, but overall, like skill wise and statistically, I think he'll blow Draymond out the water. Just with shooting.
In terms of what?
It's like just scoring. I'm just saying, being able to score. Like,
yeah, scoring, but. He will never have be as impactful.
Yeah, true. I mean, you got to win to say that, bro. Like, at the end of the day, bro, we all look at shit.
I feel like he would have stayed in Boston. Yeah. He would have had an opportunity to have a similar effect.
Yeah.
But he would have had to take a lot. We've seen the last of guys having an impact and be able to get paid the way that Draymond has.
Yeah, you're right.
And so going forward, you can be as impactful, but they don't want to pay that. Like, they don't honor that. So he's the last of a dying breed.
That's real. So would you name your unborn child Draymond? All right, we'll end it here.
What are the current odds on...
All right, we'll end it here.
This preview was brought to you by DraftKings.
Point forward.
Our next guest on the show is a gentleman I've been battling against throughout our careers over a decade. Most folks know him for doing a lot of the blue-collar work while he was in the NBA, which earned him the respect that he still has up to this point with all his endeavors, not just from a basketball standpoint, but from a media standpoint. But after this episode, I feel like you're really going to respect him more as a man and as a father. Won't try to really, really dive in on this conversation we have with All the Smoke co-host, Matthew Barnes.
What's up, y'all? Welcome back to another episode of Point Forward Podcast. Myself, Andre Iguodala, my main man, Evan Turner. When you talk about how we got here as Point Forward, the inspiration, you know, the trailblazers who have laid the tracks on athletes and their voices and bringing out a different voice on with their guests, we can look no further than this gentleman and his co-host of the All the Smoke podcast, Matt Barnes. Appreciate you for pulling up.
Man, thank you guys for having me. I appreciate that.
No doubt. So, yeah, man, like as I said in the kind of the intro, I guess you can say, you know, you guys are the trailblazers in terms of the success that you've had and the guests that you've had from all walks of life. So can you walk us back and tell us, like, how did you even get there?
Huh?
And how did you even, did you think it would be this big?
No, I mean, I didn't know what a podcast was when I pitched it to Jack. I just knew we were both kind of, I was just transitioning, from playing with you guys and calling it a career. Jack had been out maybe 2 years. We were both doing ESPN and Fox, and people were liking our kind of no holes bar truth. You know what I mean? Just kind of, it was like, it's refreshing the way you guys talk about the game. And kept getting a lot of feedback. You guys should start doing stuff to get, do something together. And I'm just like, okay, what can we do? We were at my house in the Bay one time, fellowshipping, relaxing, watching the game. I was just like, let's do a podcast. He was like, what's a podcast? I was like, I don't know, but we can smoke and drink and cuss. Because, you know, with the, you know, the platforms with Fox and ESPN respectively, there's a type of line you have to walk. And although I like talking to that audience, I also like to talk to the homies. A man cave. When I pitched this idea to the people at Showtime, I was just like, you know, I want to put a camera on a man cave conversation or a barbershop conversation, because I feel like no matter if you're an athlete, celebrity, regular person, those are the best conversations. So we went at it and, you know, blindly kind of figuring out what it is. And, you know, lo and behold, our first year, we won Sports Podcast of the Year, had an amazing track of guests. And from there, I've just been kind of learning and navigating the space. And, you know, I think probably the coolest thing from this is, like you said, like we've encouraged more guys to speak their mind. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at your teammate Draymond Green, you look mm-hmm. at Paul George, you look at Jeff Teague is a new nut on the scene, talking crazy. Yeah. You know, Iman Shumpert, yep. JJ Redick, yeah. The list goes on. And you know what I've kind of seen is kind of a shift in kind of the matrix as far as how people want to receive their news, or particularly mm-hmm. sports news. Mm-hmm. And you know, although it's great, I work for ESPN, I've done it for a handful of years, and I think it's an amazing platform. You don't necessarily need those huge machines behind you anymore to get your point across, because at the end of the day, fans want to hear what we have to say. They want to know what it's like to win 4 championships. And as great as Stephen A. Smith is, he can't tell you what it's like to win, or what is it like to do this and that. So they want to know how we feel in those moments and those experiences. So I say all that to say, like, it's been a blessing, you know. Shout out Q Miles and D Miles and Q Rich. You know, mm-hmm. I kind of feel like the knuckleheads yes. started it, and then we came and kind of took it to, you know, a new level. And I love all the, you know, it's a crowded space now. It used to be kind of an empty pool. Now it's a crowded pool. So, yeah. You know, my job and what I've been smoking and praying on is how mm-hmm. do we take this to the next level? You know, so that's what I'm kind of trying to figure out right now in our off season.
And with the name, you know, All the Smoke.
The logo lit too.
Yeah, the logo crazy. Logo's crazy. Yeah.
Shout out my sister. My sister came up with the name. So I put it out to the fans, like, you know, me and Jack are doing a podcast. I'll give $2,500 to whoever comes up with the name. And my sister came up with the name. And she asked where her money was. I was like, your car sitting outside of your house. I already paid for
real,
that. So
that's
you're
real.
Good. But no, shout out to my sister because she came up with the name.
Hennessy and Mitchell & Ness have come together for the ultimate drop. A limited edition collection to celebrate Hennessy's continued partnership with the NBA. Because some things just go together, like Evan and myself.
Hey, man, remember when we met back in the day? at Tim Grover's attack facility. Mm-hmm. I think it was like 08. I was finishing up my freshman year, and you were about to prepare to get that bag, right?
Yes, my extension year.
We met in 08. In 2010, we fast forward to be each other's teammates. Mm-hmm. I obviously thought I was better than you. Then the first day of practice, I go baseline, and you Brian blocked my shot before
that
Brian.
That was a good block, G. Bro, I remember that.
Bro, that was an amazing block. I'm looking like, bro, what just happened back there? And then I'm like thinking something, like talking to my agent, like, bro, you just said I was better than this dude?
Look, on the court, you're surrounded by a collection of personalities, egos, and talent. But when the pieces come together, that's when you form a great team. The same thing is true when you mix a great drink. Different ingredients come together for the first time, complementing one another to make something out of this world. And beyond the drinks, this drop with Hennessy and Mitchell and Ness celebrates the intersection of basketball with art, music, and fashion. Elements of culture that represent ways the fans and players pay homage to the game.
The exclusive collection will have a limited drop available for both in retail and online. Check out at Hennessy US on Instagram for more information. Hennessy, without your spirit, it's only a game. 21 and older, please drink responsibly.
Most weight loss programs focus on restriction and inflexible routine, which is why most diets fail. But Noom isn't a diet. It's a weight management program that uses psychology and biology to help you develop healthy, sustainable habits. Noom believes that weight loss starts with the brain, and their daily lessons are tailored to help users understand the science behind food cravings and eating choices. Whether you want to lose weight, increase physical activity, meet a health goal, or simply change the way you think about food, Noom can help you build healthy habits while still enjoying your favorite foods. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com and check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
No, but with the name, it was like perfect timing too.
Yeah.
Because as you know, as an athlete, it was looked upon, it was frowned upon,
yeah,
you know, anything, you know, marijuana based. And now we're seeing that the trends change in terms of the health benefits from it. Although I did see something today or yesterday that said it was worse than cigarette. But it all depends on who's putting out this information, right? But I say it all to say, you know, the timing has been incredible in terms of the acceptance, and it's been embraced. And so how do you look at the name and how people see marijuana now, and how you can leverage that into not just, you know, a free free speaking environment, but also you can turn it into a business?
Yeah, I mean, I love it, Drake, to be honest with you. And it's something that, you know, kind of just, it's been in the making, to be honest with you. Like, I'm not proud of, but I found cannabis at 14, and I had a really tough upbringing. And at the time when I smoked it, it was just, I knew it allowed me to relax, it allowed me to sleep, it allowed me to focus and kind of shut off the rest of the world. So it was something early on that I tried, and it was for me. So I mean, tell you, through high school, through UCLA, through 15 years of professional basketball, like, I used cannabis, you know what I mean? So, you know, when I first came in the league in 2002, 2003, 2004, I think maybe to 2005, 2006, like, we used to get one preseason test, and the rest of the time it was, you know, it was do what you do. You know, we're not going to promote it, but we're not going to test you for it. You know, fast forward a few years after that, you know, baseball's, you know, steroid heavy, and football's having issues, and what can we get basketball players on? Because we're not really pill poppers, we're not really out there.
And those dudes can still smoke weed, right, and everything during,
yeah,
the season.
It's crazy, because, yeah, they got that one preseason,
yeah,
test,
yeah,
you know,
wild.
So what are these athletes in the NBA doing? I think they're smoking weed, and to be honest with you, Dre, and I don't think it's no secret no more, it's 70% probably dudes. I know in my era, I'm not sure about this new young era, but I know probably 70, 75% of guys were using and consuming. And, you know, me particularly, like, I'm not a big drinker, I'll socially drink painkillers, upset my stomach, to, you know, one Vicodin upset my stomach. So I just always found peace and support and relief from cannabis.
So what was the, like, the response like from the higher up? You pitched, you spoke earlier, you did a 20-minute pitch on all the smoke. And at that time, like, even 5 years ago, people were messing with marijuana. But
yeah,
it was kind of like, You're trying to still have a, you know, somewhat NBA career and also not only push this out your living room, but onto, you know, into the media and onto a big platform like Showtime, which is crazy.
It wasn't, they weren't ready for it at the time. I'm like, they loved the idea, but, you know, I remember we did our first media shoot day and we smoked the whole entire time. And I think at the time it was Viacom, well, Showtime was under the Viacom umbrella, and it just, at the top, it wouldn't get clearance. So maybe for like the first season, it was all the smoke, and we would just smoke before and after. But I think, I forgot who broke the seal, but I think it was maybe Snoop. Where Snoop,
he cracked the code for like
man,
years.
Come on, man, he's cracked the code for everybody. Yeah. But I think, you know, he sat there and smoked 2, 3, 4 big old blunts, and I'm just like, fuck it, let's do it. And you know, we both we started smoking, and it was kind of cool. So we just kind of understood that, you know, obviously if you have a current athlete or a former athlete on, that's not someone you smoke with. But you kind of pick and choose who we smoke with, and you know, from there, it kind of just slowly but surely became acceptable. And it was just like, cool.
You never smoked too much where it kind of like messed up the show? You're like,
I always try to be self-aware because I know myself really well. And I know I can get blowed and just kind of zone out. And it was funny. And Stack, my guy, and I love him. And we've had this real conversation. Jack would smoke too much sometimes. And we would go back on the edits and see this motherfucker dozing off or kind of just in a zone. And I was like, Jack, it's just like, you know, moderation. So, you know, again, because like I said, if we're free flowing, you know, if you're around some dudes are smoking, next thing you're laughing, joking, next thing someone's knocked out. You know what I mean? That's just how, you know, someone sleeps. So, you know, it was just kind of had to learn ourselves and understand that we still had to represent our brand, ourselves, and the conversation and respect who our guests were. And, you know, we learned it, and it's been fun.
So with the representation, it's one thing to represent yourself, but we're all fathers and everything like that. Sometimes you might have your own personal opinion and how you represent yourself for the world, but when you go home and everything and the conversation of, you know, it's a tough conversation what everybody's going to have with marijuana user and kind of explaining to your child of like, this is the way I went. Mm-hmm. Like, do you ever have any hesitancies, or you like, you understand it fully and like, yo, just so y'all know, like I was 14, I did this. Are you like, I'm gonna beat your ass if I catch you using my money about weed?
I mean, it's to me, and as fathers today, we know we have to prepare our kids the best we can because we never had the internet at the palm of our hands. So we don't know what they're seeing, doing, all this other kind of shit. So we just have to prepare them the best we can. And I feel like when I retired in 2017, the boys were 9. And the first time they saw, because I'd always hid it from them up until that point, and they saw me smoking one night when I put them to bed. I was down by the pool smoking. They came down the next day, and they had just happened to learn, like, they were talking about smoking cigarettes in class. And they're like, Dad, you know, if you smoke cigarettes, your lungs are gonna, like, literally the next day. And I'm like, fuck, do I lie to them, or do I tell them I was smoking a joint and tell them why? So I thought, and I'm just like, I'm going to tell them the truth. So I'm sitting 2 9-year-old boys down who are super curious. I'm like, that's not a cigarette. That was a joint. And like, well, what's a joint? And I'm just like, well, you know how daddy's played basketball for a long time, and my knees and my ankles, my back are sore sometimes. You know, I don't really like to drink. I don't like when I take painkillers, they hurt my stomach. So I'll smoke a joint and it'll help me sleep and it'll help relieve the pain from my body. And they're like, oh, okay. And then one of the twins, Carter's like, well, Dad, I just sprained my ankle. When can I smoke? And I'm like, oh, shit. You know what I mean? So this kid is 9, but I kind of felt like, and I told him, you got to be older. And they're like, older like you? I'm like, yeah, you got to be at least 30, you know? But I just kind of feel like I'd rather be proactive than reactive. And not only the cannabis discussion, but the sex discussion. My kids are going to be freshmen in high school now. So I had to buy them condoms the other day, and I was so conflicted. Like, what the fuck am I doing? They're 14. But at the same time, like, I know they're to that point, if they haven't done it, it's really close. So I'd rather I'm 43. I'm not ready to be a grandfather. You know what I mean? I still got 6 kids between 4 and 14. So it's just like, again, I'd rather be proactive than reactive. And I respect every parent's approach to it.
But we seen Euphoria.
Right. You know what I mean? So I just want to be ahead of the game. And it's so real. Like, we've had conversations not even too long ago. It's just like, you know, and I brought it to them. I was like, whenever you guys are ready to smoke, let me know, because I'll smoke with you first. You know what I mean? Because I want you to know how you're going to feel, what is it going to feel like, what's it going to do to you. You have to kind of microdose yourself, because in the next 2 years they're going to be with their friends at parties doing God knows what. You know what I mean? So again, I just kind of always want to prepare them. It's weird because some people say, like, why are you doing this? But again, the way the world moves and how fast they are now, like I said, I'd rather be proactive than reactive.
I mean, that right there is a lesson in itself, you know, because I think a lot of us try to figure out different ways to get to our kids. And I know, like, this is Uncle Evan to my kids, and a few times I couldn't get through to my son. I'm like, man, call your Uncle Evan. Hey, Evan, call this dude, man. And it's like, sometimes you can, it's okay to say you don't know.
Yeah. So, or you don't know. But I was, as we all know, as fathers, like, I could be saying something, you could be saying something, and it comes from Evan Turner or Steph Curry or KD, and it's just like, oh, shit. I'm like, motherfucker, I just told you that.
That's been happening a lot.
You know what I mean? So it's just like, sometimes it's just a different voice. So I think it's all about your approach and your delivery. You know what I mean? I'm never trying to scold or listen, I did this, so you can't do that. Like, I feel like with my kids, I'm evolving as well, because this new world is nuts. Like, their generation is crazy. You know what I mean? So instead of trying to be, this is how we did it, like, I have to find that thin line between, shit, dad, I coach too, but then also giving them game in life.
Yeah. So I'm going to switch subjects, but it's very similar to the boys. How does it feel when you have, like, cultural icons speaking on your name? You know, like Kanye West. Mm. Yeah, you know, he has a song called 30 Hours. It's one of my favorite songs, right? And everyone knows, you know, I'm not asking to relive that moment, but, you know, how
an honorable moment.
That's what I thought.
Like, that moment should be, like, illuminated. Like, legit. Like, to all you goofies that break bread with niggas and act like you done forgot. Like, no, that shit ain't cool.
It's just the code. That's it. It's the code. Yeah, talk that shit though, L.
My fault. I'm just saying.
No. Like, we're all on the same accord, but I just, in terms of, you know, just being like, you were part of like a cultural moment in terms of like the Kanye West. And so, you know, not asking about the situation, but how was it the first time hearing it? And what were you thinking? Because it's like, it's not normal that, you know, Kanye West is dropping the name.
I mean, it's kind of like an urban legend when you hear it, because I didn't drive 90 miles. You know what I mean? I drove 10 minutes, but I was in Santa Barbara that day, and it kind of transpired, and I drew from my place. I went back to my place in the I'll just say how it would happen. So I'm not going to tell you what. So I was at training camp with the Grizzlies, and I had went out to Memphis early to work out, and we came back to Santa Barbara for training camp, and I hadn't seen the Twins in a couple of weeks, so I told, you know, my ex, y'all bring the boys down. I'll get you a room. I'm going to see them last day of training camp. And then I got to go back to Memphis. I think we got Saturday off. So I asked the coach, like, yo, can I go back to LA and I'll fly? I'll be back for practice on Monday or Sunday, whenever the fuck it was. He's like, yeah, no problem. So we drive back and I'm with my ex and the kids. And that's when everything kind of had transpired. And then I went over and did what I had to do. But after the fact, because again, at that time, they're 7. And you kind of start hearing things, and, you know, obviously they were upstairs asleep when everything went down. But again, I would rather just, I mean, not giving them all the details, because they don't need to know all the details, but just be real with them.
Right.
You know what I mean? I just kind of feel like being real, even if it may be a little too early, I'd rather be real than sugarcoat shit, because I seen it all at an early age. So me handling that stuff with them and talking and them kind of asking questions without kind of disrespecting him, because he's their stepdad now, you know, and as we were talking about off camera, like, he's the head coach at their high school now. You know what I mean? The kids are going to be playing for him, and people are like, oh, how do you feel? Like, me and Derek been cool since like the following summer. Like, we squashed the shit the following summer, and he's been great, very present in their life, another father, you know? So to me, it's more like, yo, they were two men trying to raise two men, you know, regardless of the situation. We got past that part. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's keeping it real with them. But again, not disrespecting the whole situation, because it is. I don't want them to ever think it's okay to disrespect their mom or to disrespect him.
Yep.
So it was, again, just some real ass conversations for yeah. That's why I feel so comfortable with my boys, because I've been giving them real shit for a long time. You know what I mean? And like I said, our job as parents is to game your kids as much as possible. So when they're out on their own, you hope that they're going to make the right decisions, because we're not going to be there with them. So I've just given them a lot of real game and real life shit and real life situations for a long time. And now they're starting to come into their own and see these situations kind of manifest in front of them. And I just hope that myself and their mom and Derek and my fiance, and we've done, you know, as a village, we've done the best we can for these kids.
And do they listen to the pod, the boys?
They do. That's why they started their. That's how they started their little podcast, you know, they were listening to mine, and it's because it's a huge gap. You know what I mean? But when we were able to throw huge names on there, like, oh, you know, Steph was on there, or Kobe, you know, we did Kobe's last interview, and they see the names and it kind of draws their attention. So that's kind of what got them the idea. We're like, well, should we want to do a podcast, Dad? And, you know, we're in the second season of the Barnes Boys podcast. So it's just like, you know, I want to, again, teach them, game them, learn business, get their first LLC, you know, they're starting to get, you know, we're starting to get, you know, brand deals for them. So it's just like, I want to be able to give them everything I didn't learn until my 30s.
Yeah. And going back to, you know, particularly that with the pod, the boys get to see how hard you work. Because this is something that I, this is when I became a really big fan of you in the pod. Like, I saw how hard you worked.
Hey, it's a grind, bro.
And I'm like, no, this dude's working.
Yeah, it's like a grind. And people think podcasts, and I don't know if they still look at it as like podcasts, but like podcasts are taking over. You know, like I said before, like it's less the big machines and it's more, how do you guys feel? How do these other athletes feel? So it's a grind. And I think people at the beginning, like, kind of didn't understand what that grind was like. And, you know, again, that was a learning process. And as you guys know, it's hard, man, you know, for getting the talent, you know, coming up and creating an environment where they feel comfortable enough to let their guard down and talk and being able to go back and forth. And then, you know, meeting demands as far as how many once a week has to drop, or we have an audio and a digital deal, so we had to do extra. So it's just, you know, living up to everything. But it's fun because it's been a learning process, and we've learned but also inspired others. So it's been fun, you know, to be able to inspire, you know, guys, you know, that are putting work like you guys, but then also inspire the kids to want to do it as well.
You sit down, you know, you say, when you learn, it's where innovation comes from. Does that open your mind and where you can take it next? And when you're sitting there and like, yo, this is the first time I ever told this story. And you're like, out of all the people they know, they never told that to. Are you like, yo, I might be in this, you know, tapping into something crazier, pause deeper.
We got, you know, I mean, it's been a blessing. You know, Jack's branched off into to doing boxing now. You know, I'm doing pre-game, post-game, color, and basketball, and traveling around the world to speak. And so it's branched off into, you know, a lot of different sectors. And, you know, to me, the challenge for me is how do we continue to raise the bar? How do we continue to learn from our brothers in the space? But how do we continue to kind of push the charge forward? So, I mean, that's, you know, the challenging but fun thing to think about. You know, we're in the last year of our situation with Paramount Showtime, so, you know, there's some conversations there about, you know, what's next. But, you know, just continuing to put out great content first and foremost, you know, start traveling and doing shows, live shows, and just, you know, being more interactive with our fans, you know, letting fans come behind the scenes and learn the game, you know, give them contests to do, to just be more interactive. And you know, that's part of just, you know, continuing to try to elevate.
I think, you know, I'll double back on, you know, the same reason why people hate you playing against you, but they love you as a teammate. Like, Matt tried to kill me when he played for the Clippers.
I tried to do?
Goodness gracious. So I don't know.
You got to tell the
you got a flagrant.
You got to tell the 76ers practice story, too.
Okay, we'll get
there. Oh, yeah, you were there.
I
a baby, though. Was that your rookie year or second year?
Mo Cheeks, my
when
God.
I don't fuck with Mo Cheeks at all.
No, but they always told that story, and it's always like, yeah, but at the same time.
He was
told,
on some ill shit. That's
So when I go back, so when you were playing with the Clippers, like, if you go on YouTube, there's a Matt Barnes versus Andre Iguodala. You just type that in.
I didn't know
Clippers
that.
Versus Warriors.
Check it out.
And you were killing and I was killing. Because, you know, it's Blake Griffin.
Uh-huh.
It's Chris Paul.
Oh, there's a lot of big names.
It's Klay Thompson. Mm-hmm. It's Steph Curry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's 2014.
This is right before you guys cracked.
Yeah, this is before. And so those were like the big names. But you and I, like, whoever had the good game between you and I, that's who won.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and we were the X-Factors.
You couldn't miss. Right? And y'all ended up winning in seven.
Uh-huh.
Right? And
that's the Sterling year too.
That was a Sterling year too.
Mm-hmm.
And the year was like, I was under the basket and I just felt my feet. I'm like, where am I going? And I just landed on my back and I'm like, what the?
But I threw you or elbowed you? What did I do? Me. Did I?
But I didn't even see you. I didn't know where you was at, but you was right next to me. But you know, you in the NBA, so.
I'm real handsy.
We all tough guys, because you know, the referees, so you don't think nothing. Like, I'm like, I'm like, how did I just fall like this? And I looked out like, this nigga just crashed. Yeah, he just threw me on the ground.
Bad.
But it was funny because it's like, in the heat of the moment, like, I had like no reaction. Like, I'm gonna kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like that. And I rarely have any. It's only been one time I've really been mad at another player on the court, and I've been mad. I wanted to whoop a ref more than anybody. But you got a flagrant. And
I'm going to go find the play. I don't remember.
I think we ended up winning that game. But after the game, one of my guys hit me, was like, yo, what's up? What's good with Matt Barnes? And I was like, I've been in games where guys have like thrown a bow at me, and it's kind of like setting a message, and it's like how you react to it. And I was like, I really didn't take it personal. But it's funny because when we became teammates, like we always were on the same page on the court. Like, we had crazy chemistry.
Yeah,
like,
he
I knew where you were at, you knew where I were at, and we like the fourth and fifth options.
Yeah.
But still, we were the ones making the plays, which is was really funny. But you should check that out.
Yeah, I definitely need to. I mean, and to go back, so that I wanted to know what you guys thought during that Sterling shit, because, you know, obviously this is before you guys take off and become a dynasty. Like, not where we were big brothers, because we didn't really accomplish shit, but we were just kind of one of the top teams in the Western Conference, Lob City. And that was the last season, you know, I think in the middle of the series, the Donald Sterling shit comes out. Everyone in the world's telling us we need to sit out and fuck this, and you're working for a white man that doesn't fuck with you. And I'm thinking, a lot of you work for white people that don't fuck with you, so I'm not, you know what I mean? Keep it real. So we didn't know what we want. So we thought about sitting out, and then we heard that you and Steph were talking. Like, what were your guys' thoughts? Were you guys kind of playing off what we were going to do? Were you guys ready to do whatever? I think our thought in the locker room was, bro, if we sit out and boycott this shit, like, does that mean we're, like, we're the two seed, I think. Does that mean that we can't move on to the second round? Like, how many games do we sit? Are they going to fire this motherfucker right away? How long do we have to sit out? So I think the unknown is kind of what kept us from doing what we did. But what were you guys thinking?
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Our thought was, right off the bat, I'm thinking, whatever they doing, we doing it.
Okay.
Because there's no way we taking a win. Like, we competitors like that. We ain't taking no W. And so we're thinking the same thing. Like, man, if we go out here and play, they can call us some sellouts. And, you know, like, you know me. I'm like, I can't wait to stand up for something. You know what I'm saying? And, but at the same time, it's like, you know, if they want to play because, you know, they feel like,
yeah,
you know,
we felt like we had one of the best teams in the
league. It's bigger than Donald Sterling too. Mm-hmm. Like, it's bigger than that.
It was never about him.
Right. And so it's like, listen, if they want to compete and play, like, yeah, we, so it was really like, we, whatever they doing, we supporting that.
We shouldn't have played. Y'all beat the dog shit out of us that game. Y'all beat us by like 30 that game. But yeah, that was interesting, because we did the unknown, and I think what kept us from moving forward. And by the way, there's a show coming out on FX either the end of this year or during the playoffs next year called The Sterling Affairs, where they reenact that whole thing. So that'll be
there was a 30 for 30 Ramona Sherbourne. Yeah, so she spoke to me about
that's how that was born. That's how the show was born. She brought me on as an EP.
Yeah. And after that game seven, you remember what happened after that game seven?
I was out on the court still. Did someone try to fight Chris or fuck Chris up?
No, there was another tunnel situation, but ours was first. Game seven, y'all win at Staples. And we're in a locker room, and obviously y'all locker room is at the end. And one of y'all assistant coaches was yelling down the hall, talking crazy.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah.
You know who
take
it was?
That. We don't know who that. We don't know. Uh-huh. They know who it was. Our coaches knew who it was, but it's one of the assistants. I don't know the guy. Like, I never heard his name. Like, I ain't know him. So he's just yelling, yeah, take that. Like, he yelling from the hallway.
Motherfucker, you didn't even do nothing.
Right, but none of us, the players, we just chilling. But Steph was mad.
Oh, really?
You know Steph don't get mad.
Right.
And Steph was like, what? Who? Hold on, what? He opened the door and go down there. I'm like, oh, no, Steph riding out. Like, I'm behind him. Like, yeah, I ain't got no choice. So Steph walked down there. He walked in the locker room because it's like a cold tub right there. Yeah. Yeah. And I never seen it. And I'm like, it's like, Steph, you just going to walk into the locker room? He was like, and so we saw Austin. And Austin kind of like froze up like, like, I'm like, Austin, we ain't finna jump you. Like, we don't move like that.
We might.
But, you know, and they family now, which is funny. Right. But Steph was like, yo, Austin, like, yo, man, come on, man. Like, have some respect on taking the win. Like, right. y'all won. Like, it's cool. He was like, what you mean? He was like, yo, somebody was just yelling down the hall talking crazy. Like, come on, dog. That was disrespectful. And Austin was like, nah, I don't know what y'all talking about. And we knew it wasn't Austin.
Right.
But I think Steph probably knew Austin knew who did it. It was mm-hmm. one of the coaches. And he was just like, nah, fam. He was like, come on, dog. Like, just tell whoever that was. Like, come on, man. Be respectful. Right. That ain't right. cool. So I grabbed Steph and we walked back to the locker room. A couple other guys came down. I was like, it's all good. Like, mm-hmm. we went back to the locker room. And then before you know it, I think it was Big Baby or somebody was like, yo, y'all talking shit? And so now y'all, eight dudes come out of y'all locker room and then all of us come out of the locker room. So it's like from here to that wall, it's like some space. But we looking at y'all looking at us. And all I remember was Big Baby, Glenn Davis. His eyes like went like this way. Like one went this way, the other one went this
that
way.
That white foam started coming out the corner of his mouth.
He looked crazy. He was like, I'll kill you, Jermaine O'Neal. Like, J.O. would have had nothing to do with nothing, but he was like, I'll kill you. And then it was just like,
I hey, can't
man,
believe
y'all go back that way and we could go. It was crazy.
I can't believe that happened and I wasn't there. That is the craziest part about it because I should have been in the mix.
Yeah, you it know was what insane.
I mean? But I remember hearing, I didn't get that much in depth. That's the full story that I haven't heard. But yeah, I remember hearing about it. I just didn't know what was true and what wasn't true. But that was interesting.
Well, looking back from that series and, you know, finishing up the Donald Sterling situation and we're years removed and everything that happened since then, like playing like Monday morning quarterback, would you guys have done something?
Yeah, I think we would have, you know, if we could have been on the same page, if we could have been on the same page with them, I definitely, some sort of, you know, that's powerful, like not playing a playoff game. You know what I mean? That would have been powerful with the up and coming who, you know, who was next.
Or Chris Paul was there too.
Yeah, and we thought that, you know, we had a chance to win a championship that year. I think it would have been very powerful to be able to sit back. But then, you know, I mean, I faced so much real racism in my life, like the KKK nearly burned my high school down and put a green light on my head and tried to kill me. I had to move when I was in high school. That when that Sterling shit came out, like to me, I knew he said some shit he shouldn't have said, and obviously it was in a racial tone, but it wasn't that big of a deal to me because like I said, when I was trying to be funny, when people were talking to what tells what do, like he's not the only owner that thinks like that. He's just the only one dumb enough to get caught recording
he
with
just mad his girl.
You know, some bum ass mistress.
He's
you
just
know,
mad his girl.
Hey, she's a whole new star. Like she thought she owned the Staples Center. She was such a train wreck, bro. She thought his little chick thought that she was the next thing. And this is my team and my arena, and we see her sitting there and Shelly sitting there. I'm like, damn, Sterling, you a cold motherfucker, boy. You know, like he was out here doing some shit, but it was such a circus. But it was just like, you know, and I say with all due respect, like our team was almost circus-ish. You know, like we had so much talent, but there were so many egos there that we couldn't get out of our own way. And that kind of leads me to when I was blessed with the opportunity to come fuck with you guys right before I was done. I'm just like, you look at all these superstars from KD to Steph to Klay to Draymond on the rise to then super solid vets like yourself and Dot and David West, rock star head coach. And at least while I was there, there was no egos. You know what I mean? Everyone left that shit at the door. And getting a chance to be on a team that talented where it's just about winning, I was like, damn, if the world can understand. To me, that's the secret of why you guys won, because you guys, you know, up into that little crack with KD kind of slowed things down, but you guys got back on track. But that environment is second to none, you know, from ownership's doing everything you need. All you have to do is go out there and play basketball. The way you guys love and fuck with each other, like that's not normal. And I was telling like players after that summer, I was talking to Ian and some of them guys just like, yo, don't take this shit for granted, bro, because I've been around this league for 15 years. This shit is not like this. But coming and playing with you guys was amazing. I was just heartbroken because, I mean, obviously I came in when KD sprained his knee and came in right away, was playing, you know, 18, 22 minutes. And like, I clicked right away with you guys because I always was a thinker. And I just like, yo, if I ever got a chance to go to Golden State, I'll eat there because it's so simple. You know what I mean? And, you know, I got hurt the game. KD came back and it was like probably my worst ankle sprain of my life. So I kind of had to just sit there and be a vet and talk to guys and support and kind of got a front row seat. But that was kind of one of the hardest experiences of my life because it was probably one of the best. But the fact that I was hurt and I didn't get to earn that ring, like I felt like my body of work, the years I put in the league, got that ring. But I'm, you know me, I'm similarly like, I'm a competitor. Like I wanted to be out there guarding Kawhi and LeBron and all these other motherfuckers that I know I could help with. And not being healthy and having to sit and watch, that shit was hard, bro.
For sure. And I've always thought about this too, because Evan just spoke to it and your success post career. And I remember one time you know, I always look up guys, like I go to Basketball Reference a lot, basketballreference.com, and just look at guys like history, like, you know, what's their best years, points, field goal percentage, 3-point percentage. And, you know, I spoke about this before when we were with the Clippers, like you win a couple games, you just didn't miss from three. And I remember I was your teammate in Philly first. And when you got there, it was an incident where it was like, don't shoot the ball. So, you know, like, I didn't know what type of game you had in terms of shooting. You know, college is college and, you know, you see guys, but in the league, it could be a little different with guys, with, like, what's your role?
Right.
And so, I've never spoken on this. We talk about, you know, never speaking on something. Maybe it's just you and your presence, but... And then you made us pay for it when you got traded to go to state. But kind of like, you know, Evan wants to hear that story from you.
So I'm a throw-in in this trade when C. Webb goes to Philly to play to trade. So first
from
of
SAC,
all,
yep.
Webb had a no trade clause. So going to G League the first part of my, and then I get picked up by the Clippers, have a good year. They're ready to give me like a 2-year, whatever the deal was. But this is right when SAC is popping and they're going against the Lakers. And I'm from SAC, but I'm a Laker fan. And Webb was always like, him and Jay Will were my big homies. So every summer I'd work out with them. So I say all that to say, I skipped the 2-year deal with the Clippers and play for the Kings, because that was my hometown team. Right before All-Star break, they want to trade Webb. And I was like, how the fuck you going to trade Webb? He had a no-trade clause, but we were just had packed for this long road trip, and we're at this strip club, and we found out we get traded. And Webb has still the power to veto it because he has a no-trade clause, and he's just, like, he was heartbroken. He's like, after all I've done for this organization, the fact that they would trade me and not even really give me no ins and outs about it, they don't want me, fuck it, we're leaving. And I'm hoping he's going to veto the trade because I'm at the crib. I'm like, come on, bro, what the fuck? So anyway, long story short, we end up going to Philly. First year, we had Jim O'Brien.
First year was Jim O'Brien.
That big motherfucker looked like Beavis and Butthead. He was the coach, and I just wasn't feeling his fake-ass Rick Pitino arrogant energy. So I didn't say, so, you know, obviously I'm not saying that. I'm still trying to make the league. Next year, I come back, and we got Mo Cheeks. And, again, I'm trying to find a spot. Was you and Kyle's second year?
Yeah, my second year, Kyle Culver's third year.
Lou Will was a rookie, right? Remember that one time we got him to drink all those beers on the bus before we went to the plane and we had to carry? So that's another story. But so anyway, it's like I'm not really in the rotation, so I'm not someone who's going to speak. It's early on in my career. So I hired Chris Webber's shooting coach, Buzz, and I'm constantly before or after practice working on my shot. I'm not getting minutes. So, you know, whenever I'm in practice, I try to go hard. So I remember it was like a 3-on-2. Someone threw me a pass. I made the shot. And Mo Cheeks stops practice. Like, what are you doing?
Young man.
What are you doing? I'm just like, oh, shit. I thought I just made it. You don't do that here. And then it's just really kind of like, I'm all for being coached. I came from a dad that yelled. I played football. I'm all for you coaching me if you feel like you need to yell at me. But I felt like he crossed the line and like was trying to be funny. Because I kind of always felt like he was in a transition from still being one of the leaders or funny guys in the locker room to being a coach. I always felt, because I remember the time that AI told him in DC, nigga, just because you got the suit jacket on don't make you a coach. Like, I kind of felt like Mo Cheeks was stuck in like a weird spot, but he tried to target me that one day. And I just like, yeah, I'm all for you doing this, but I really feel like this is disrespectful. So rewind that. Maybe 2 weeks before that, I'm in the gym with the shooting coach, and Mo comes in laughing. I don't know why you're getting all these extra shots. We're working on a shot. You're not going to shoot here. And me and the shooting coach just kind of look at it. I shook my head. I didn't say nothing. He kind of laughed and walked by. So this was the second incident. So this is the second time where he tried to bust me out in practice like a week or two later. I wanted to whoop his ass. So I charged after him. I don't know if it was Webb or Mark Jackson or someone like grabbed me, but I was going to whoop Mo's ass that day. Period, I probably would have been kicked out the league and I probably would have never really got a chance to get running. So that next year is when I go to that We Believe Golden State team.
Mm-hmm.
And I told Nelly, I'm just like, yo, I don't fuck with this dude at all. I kind of briefly gave him the cliff notes of how he dogged me out there. He's like, yeah, as long as you're in foul trouble, go. I was like, as long as you don't get in foul trouble, I'll play you as long as you can play. He lets me go. I hit my first shot I hit. Oh, that shit was lucky. Next shot I hit. Oh, that shit was lucky too. So now, like, I end up going like, 6 for 7 from the 3-point line, like 9 for 11 from the field. And every time I made a basket, man, suck my dick, bitch ass. Like, I went off on him so much
I heard it.
Bro, the whole bench, the trainers, everyone, because everyone knew how he dogged me in the year before. So I was, and he was the one that like poked me to start this game. Like, I wouldn't even say nothing to do. I didn't like him, but I wasn't, it's not my place to really disrespect another coach. You know, it's a new season. Fuck what you was talking about. I'm not with you no more. But it got to a point where he was talking shit to me. And I remember every single shot I hit, I only missed 2 shots. I think I was like 9 for 11, 26, 27 points. Every shot, it was fuck you, suck it. Like, I was like, that's how, but these dudes were dying laughing. Like, every, you'd see the assistant coaches giggling, the trainers giggling, the players are busting up. They don't even care. Like, Webb and AI were going, laughing their asses off. But yeah, that was my Mo Cheek story, man, because it was heartbreaking too, because I looked up, I mean, Mo's a legend in this game. Like, I looked up to Mo, and then getting a chance to play for him, like, oh, you a bitch. straight up.
No, I was there. But one thing I also noticed is, you know, there's always those guys that, you know, like Kevon Looney falls into this category. I feel like they always get the short end of the stick on their contracts. And I always feel like you were one of the guys. And like Lou Williams, we always talk about, he was 20-point career scorer and never made over $10 million in the league in 1 year, like never. And, you know, now that you're having the success that you're having right now, you know, what type of advice would you give to guys like that that always seem to be like, you know, the glue guys always get the short end of the stick, you know? So how do you go about it with understanding, too, that winning will put you in position to make it up on the back end?
And I think, Dre, that's what fucked me up, is because I'd always take less money from a team that could possibly win than more money from a bad team, because I wanted to win. And I think I got that. And one of my OGs told me this a while, maybe 10 years into my career. He's like, bro, you've turned down in maybe 2 or 3 deals close to combined maybe $17 million just to go to a teams that, you know, you can possibly win. Cause I'm to the thinking, if you win, everybody eats, and that's where I'll be seen, because I'm always you can say what you want. I played for 7, 8 teams, but I was always a starter or first 2 guys off the bench my whole entire career. So I think they put a stereotype on me that Matt will be there at the end and we can get him for the vet minimum. You know what I mean? Because again, every single team I went to, I was either the starter and took people's jobs and made a ton more money than me, or I was one, you know, 6 or 7 guy coming off the bench. So just keep grinding, you know what I mean? And at the same time, you know, Dre, the way I looked at it is I felt like I was definitely underpaid, but I had the respect of the guys I played with. You know what I mean? That was my main thing. It was, you know, the media. That's why I don't give a fuck about what the media says or fans say. Like, I had the respect of guys that I went up, first of all, my teammates, because that was the most important to me, but the guys I went to battle against every single night, you know, that's the same reason why, you know, Kobe recruited me. You know, like, he calls me and tells me to come play with him in LA. So my whole thing was, I definitely felt like I was underpaid, but, you know, the respect from my peers is what somewhat balanced that shit out.
Well, out of all your stops, what was your favorite team? And like, most,
I think
most
there's memorable. Like three or four teams that stand out. And, you know, I say over my journey, man, I played for 8 teams in 15 years, that I got a chance to play with a lot of great players and future Hall of Famers. You know, when you look at, I played with Webb and I played with AI, I played with Steph, Clay, that Warrior team. I played with Lob City and Chris Paul and Blake, and I played with Kobe, and I played with the older Shaq. I played with MVP Steve Nash, Amari Stoudemire. Like, I played with a lot of dope-ass players, but probably my favorite stops for all different reasons were Golden State both times. I think being on that We Believe team, making NBA history, and then coming back 10 years later and having the opportunity to see what that team was like was unbelievable. The Clipper, the Lob City team, you know, the Clippers have been a doormat for so long. Like, we took a lot of pride in being down the hall, and we used to beat the dog shit out of the Lakers back then. That was kind of one of their low points. But playing on those teams where we, you know, we were trying to hang our first banner. We won our first Pacific Division title in franchise history. And like I said, we had a really good team, but too many egos that butted heads and kind of kept us from taking that next step. And then the Lakers, getting a chance to play, you know, knowing Kobe for so many years and kind of just being competitors, to being able to have him recruit me to the team and going from teammates to like real life brothers, was an amazing experience. And just really getting a chance to peel back, you know, his layers and seeing him as a teammate, as a man, as a father, as a businessman, and just soaking up a lot of game from him. So I'd probably say those three teams in no particular order, but Golden State, the Clippers, and the Lakers.
Beautiful. Well, we appreciate you pulling up, man.
Yeah.
Inspiring us, you know, you know, like you said, with the knuckleheads, Q Rich and D Miles, you know, at the forefront of athletes having their voice speaking out. It's going to be interesting to see what happens to the old media space, yeah. You know, with The Athletic and, you know, what's going on there and, you know, what's going on ESPN at the same time. And best of luck with everything, all your endeavors, man. Hopefully you don't have to hang anybody over the balcony to get the deal done as the podcast death row. I'm joking. But no, man, you dropping mad knowledge on us. Continued success that I'm pretty sure you will have. And, you know, we rooting for you.
Without a ball, it's just a court. And without your spirit, it's only a game. So, together with the fans, we bring our best. For your next pregame, let's share a twist on a classic, the Hennessy Margarita. A squeeze of fresh lime juice and a bit of agave syrup, topped off with ice and a salted rim. Mix it, shake it, pour it, and enjoy the spirit of the NBA. Hennessy, without your spirit, it's only a game. 21 and older, please drink responsibly.